the future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Yes, indeed. Where are all my people? That is going to become an increasingly important question as we move forward in the months and years ahead. Yes, it is Friday, August 13th, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to that motherload of middle-aged millennial angst, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yes, we are streaming live right now, everybody, on our YouTube channel. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit that notification bell so you know every time we go live. On this week, look, you know, it's been, it's the end of summer kind of stuff. So we've been up and down and back and forth. Last week, we didn't have a show because I was away. And then we had, it was off for 2 weeks, and Sean was off for 2 weeks. And now we're starting to kind of head into, well, it's going to be quite a fight ahead. Let's just put it that way. So talk a little more openly today, a little more casual today. Look, it's been a huge week. It's been a big week for climate, a big week on the insurrection front, a big week on the infrastructure front, big front on the census data, the de-whitening of America front. there's just tons of stuff that's going on. So we'll kind of dip into that a little bit. We're here in Pennsylvania, right? I mean, Sean's got a bunch of kind of stuff kind of going on out there in Harrisburg. In Pennsylvania, you know, we're all kind of like going full bore on the kind of like voter suppression and kind of like, you know, the big lie in Pennsylvania as we get ready to see the heating up of the gubernatorial kind of race hit there. Also, the Senate race is kind of going to be happening here. Also, well, we'll get into that today. On today's last call, yeah, we'll talk about some fun stuff. I've been watching a new YouTube series thanks to my brother up there in Utica, New York, and I both love and hate him for it because it's burning some time. It's actually not burning time. It's actually keeping me at my desk while I'm preparing my syllabi. So I guess that's a good thing in some ways. We go there. Also, special shout out to my very own live viewer, my daughter, right, whose birthday was yesterday. Happy birthday, Scout. That was a huge day is there, and we got some kind of stuff happening with Raging Chicken. It's kind of coming your way that I'll kind of give you a little kind of sense of what's going on there. Want to remind you to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org, or you can tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. You also make sure you subscribe to Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. You can also check out Rick's like nightly stream, right? You just kind of like look wherever you stream, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. You're going to find Rick there 9 o'clock every night. And he's got a new show on WBAI in New York, which is freaking awesome, right? Reaching out there to the Big Apple right here from the center of Pennsylvania politics, Rick Smith Show. Awesome. And you got to check out the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast if you haven't already. Yes, you can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. Right? The amazing PA women steering the cauldron behind this political podcast rock the house. And they know where the bodies are buried. You got to make sure you follow them on Twitter at the Night Caucus. That's at the Night Caucus on Twitter. And attention, gamers, the Gaymin, that's the Gaymin, I-N-N, the Inn. The Gaymin is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. Yep, they're friends of the show, and they've got everything for retro N64s, latest consoles, video games for all platforms, collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, you name it. Right? And you know what? With school's in session, just keep this in mind as you're kind of, as back to school is gearing up. You know, kids get a discount with every A on their report card. Like, check them out on their Facebook page, follow them on Twitter at the Game Inn. That's with two N's, at the Game Inn. If you got a question about a game, you're looking for something that's hard to get, you just drop them a message. You can shoot them an email at thegameinpa@gmail.com or check them out on their Facebook page or Twitter, and they'd be happy to get back to you. Special shout out, as always, goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at @SongOfDayMan. That's @SongOfDayMan with two N's on Twitter. At Out to Coop Live, we're hitting the ground running. We did another open phones this past week, and the plan is for this Monday, right, is that we're going to have a couple candidates on from the Pennridge School Board race. As you know, the Pennridge School Board has been, well, let's just say there's been some contentious activity happening at school board meetings, especially if you got some QAnon people that are running for office. You've got some kind of the right-wing drift of the school board is deeply problematic. That's showing up at the school board meetings. So we want to have on some of the some school board candidates that are going to come on from the Pennridge United, right? They tend to be, they're running on the Democratic ticket, that are going to be running against the, you know, the extremists that are trying to take over our school board. So we're hoping to have, the plan is to have at least two of them on the show on Monday. To know this. Also, you got to check out our Wednesday show. The Wednesday show with Cyril Michaleko. We've been on a little bit of a hiatus, just in part because I was away last week, as you know. And Cyril's, his like summer work schedule just kind of like skyrocketed and peaked up this week. So he's had, we took a couple weeks off from that, but we'll be back kind of in no time. That's Cyril Michaleko. He's a progressive columnist from the Bucks County Courier Times and the Intelligencer. And that's the Wednesday show here. Pretty good. So well, listen, we've got a bunch of cool stuff we're going to talk about in today's last call that's kind of coming up too as well. And it's all made possible by those folks who have stepped up, become a patron of the show, right? If you want a progressive future, look, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today by becoming a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress. Look, we got rid of Trump. Yes, that's great. We're all happy about this, but we've got a lot of work to do if we want that progressive future. The fight for that future begins today. We're right here for that fight, but we need your help. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress today. Oh, man, it's crazy. Sean, man, how are you doing on this excessive heat warning day?
I am doing great. I am staying inside. I am looking forward to tomorrow when it's going to get cooler.
Yeah, I mean, almost like a regular summer day tomorrow.
Yeah, it should be like this next couple weeks, it looks like, especially out here in Harrisburg. Here's hoping it stays in the mid-80s, like low to mid-80s seasonal temperatures. So definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah, good. You know, and maybe some of the, I don't know how it's going to work. You know, one of the things that we didn't even talk about as like big news of the week and climate insurrection and infrastructure and census data, the coronavirus, of course, is back, right? For, it's COVID part two, the Delta variant.
I am concerned about this. I think this is an issue and I don't want to downplay it. I do not think we're going to see the spikes that we're going to see like we did last winter, right? I think what we're going to see here in Pennsylvania, probably like other states, they're more vaccinated. You're probably going to see it peaking at like 4,000 or 5,000 cases a day, I'm hoping, like worst case. But hopefully it doesn't last that long. It doesn't look like it's going to last as long. It seems like it's going to be a quick wave. But I mean, like, it seems like it's ripping through. Okay, so it seems like it's ripping through the unvaccinated community right now. And there are people who have gotten the vaccines are getting sick. So there are more breakthrough cases with this variant. People should be careful. I'm hoping this does not last like it did last winter. You know, I'm thinking normally like these like data would show like this should peter out. Hopefully it does, but I'm hoping it's its last gasp.
Keep hope alive, man. Keep hope alive.
I mean, look. Exactly what we said on the, exactly what you said. You're not going to tamp down people's hopes.
Yeah, I'm just like, there you go. Like, I don't want to be that guy, but, you know. I bring that up because, look,
can I tell you about the fucking hearing we were at last week?
Go for it.
I mean, the Mastriano hearing, the education hearing on mask mandates in school. So Senate Republicans, Senate Education Committee held a hearing, literally packed the room with people who are most likely unvaccinated. I'm going to say 99.9% of the room was unvaccinated.
No, so we're off to a good start already. Good.
And the only people wearing masks in the room were the people testifying and the staffers for the Department of Ed and Department of Health. So they're like the only people wearing masks were the people sitting at the table. None of the Republican legislators were, because that's what they do. And then, like, I mean, I'm just looking at the room, just like, it's a fucking like super spreader event.
Yep.
Like 80 just like unmasked people with their kids packed in this room. Like, the only other time I've seen the room that filled was like the medical marijuana hearings in 2015. Yep. So just for size, like, They fit like 90 people in a 120 person room.
Yep.
In a 120 person room.
Yep.
Like, so.
There you have it.
I mean, like, I looked at it, and I'm just like, and people were like, how many of these people are vaccinated? I'm just like, probably not.
But here's the problem, right? I mean, the problem is even like,
God's going to help them.
Let's, yeah. Not even touching that right now, because that'll take us down for a direction that will just burn way too much time. But let me just say, look, the problem is with this variant, right, is now they're showing increasingly, now they've got more and more data that's showing that even those folks who are vaccinated, even if they don't get sick, they can spread.
They're carrying, everyone's carrying.
Right, because so much is in your nasal passages, right? So much of that is before the vaccine ever has a chance to even work with it.
And even like the past couple of weeks, I've been, you know, I've started wearing my masks again.
I've never stopped.
I mean, I stopped for like, there was for like a three or four week period. there was a like, after vacation, I'm going to say there was like a 4 or 5 week period where I was not wearing my mask because they lifted the mandates. But like, I would say last week, 2 weeks ago, I also lost a few masks on vacation. Just like falling out.
You're really going with the, like, I lost my mask, therefore I can't wear it. That's what you're going with?
I just bought more masks.
Oh, okay. All right. Just, you know.
So I bought more masks. And now I've been wearing my mask again. Like, I've been like, no, going to the club. I also think like, one thing I've noticed, you're seeing a lot more people wearing the masks in general, mm-hmm. especially here in Harrisburg. I mean, I'm not like going outside the walls of Harrisburg into like the yonder,
the center, like, of the infestation, like into the nest of like, the Delta variant.
But I've been, you know, like at least in my hive, my, like, you know, my bubble, people are starting to wear their masks.
Well, look, nice. I was happy to see, like, yesterday we went to Wegmans in Montgomeryville, right? We went out for lunch there. Initially, we weren't sure. You know, it was with my daughter and my son, and weren't sure if we were actually gonna eat there or just take it out, right? Because we got there, there was nobody in the area that you kind of like eat in, so that was great. So we were able to kind of sit down and kind of and eat. We had our masks on, and I got to say, probably close to 80% of the people that were in that store had their mask on. So I was very happy to see that. However, if you come here in Perkasie and you go to the local Giant, you're lucky to get 20% of people with their mask on. Right. So that's just, I mean, just a point of contrast. So, I mean, look, and, you know, this is something that I've heard again, is that the vast majority of people are taking this seriously. I'm concerned about two things, though. Is that number one, obviously the vaccine is not yet available for kids under 12, right? And you've got, you know, Governor Wolf.
Hospital beds are fucking filling up with
right,
kids.
Right. And, you know,
like 10% of the beds.
Yeah, we didn't even put this in the show notes today, but I guess this is where we're going. So this is like, I mean, this is the kind of day it's going to be, just so everybody be well prepared for this, right? So it's like,
we're already going off the rails.
Well, I mean, yeah, whatever. Who cares? You know, at this point, but like, let me give you an example. Like, this is where, you know, frankly, I've been fed up with Governor Wolf now for a while. And this is his kind of like, hey, everything goes. You guys all decide who gets to have a mask. I'm out of here. Right. That kind of thing is, you know, all fine and dandy for, you know, I don't know. It's not fine and dandy. I don't think it's fine and dandy to begin with. Right. But what that means, practically speaking, is that here in Bucks County, right, our public health or whatever, this guy's name is Damsker, right? Dr. Damsker. And Dr. Damsker has recently given some interviews where he's basically said, yeah, he frequently disagrees with the CDC and other kind of governing bodies about how to do this stuff, right?
He's Dr. Nick Simpson.
Right. So it's like, you know, you know, Dr. Mini Kevorkian over here is like
Dr. Oz.
Right. So, but you know, it's like he's been a strange character to begin with, and I haven't been able to quite place him because, you know, it's not that he's anti-science. He's not a kind of a coronavirus denier or something like this. But, you know, as a public health official, he's certainly erred on the side of saying, we'll see how we do. You know, it's like instead of like, let's keep people safe. Because, you know, ultimately, you know, there's only so much you could do anyway as a public health official. But so he came through and basically said, you know, masks are going to be voluntary, you know. And so that's what's happening in all these schools lately. So you've got, so now you have our school. We just got a message yesterday, right, in the Penrith School District to say, masks are going to be voluntary. Yeah, you know, if anybody wants to wear one, gets great, you know. And we're not gonna be mad at anybody who wears a mask, right? Everybody gets.
And it's also like at that point, like when you're a room full of people and there's like five people wearing a mask
with no social distancing,
it's pretty pointless, like having a mask on, like the people in the room with the masks because
exactly.
But think about what this means though.
Think about what this means for a second. So now we got a decision that are coming down by school boards. And they're all pointing to David Damsker, right, out there in over there in Doylestown and Bucks County Health Department, right? So they're pointing to him. So, and he's going against the recommendations of the CDC, against the recommendations of the American Academy of Pediatrics, against the recommendations of every kind of like childhood welfare organization, and saying like, I got a hunch, and Governor Wolf supports me. There you go. So that's the state we're going into. And like, look, what you said about the Delta variant, look, there are data that show, right, that what happened in India and what happened in the UK was that, and why that's important is because India had very low vaccination rates and the UK had very high vaccination rates, like more than we do. It spiked real fast, right, and then it burned out, right? So, but that's two cases, right? And nobody, if you ask anybody about that, why that is, they don't know why. So there's no guarantee that's actually going to happen.
And I think we're playing with like fire the longer we go with these people being unvaccinated.
What's going to happen with the Omega variant, right?
Or the Lambda variant.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, because one of these like variants, like, because it only just takes like one variant to just be like, you know, 1918 flu, and people literally just start dropping dead. Like, boom, just like that's it. Like,
and if a virus could think and was conscious, right now, like you could say, like, hey, all right, let's throw this at them. Let's throw this at them and see what they do, right? Just as a test run, and looking like they didn't do anything. They didn't do anything. Like, all right, bring in Lambda. Right, you know, it's like,
and it's also, I mean, like, it's also like at this point, like the virus is just clinging on to anything and everything it can,
right,
in response to the high vaccination rates, and that's why we're seeing it just spread so quickly. But like, I mean, we're also playing the risk of like the unvaccinated people allowing this to fester and then mutate into something else. And then also, I mean, we're seeing the deathbed regrets of people, which I've watch some of the videos and
it's like it rips my heart out. I'm telling you,
I mean, for being preventable and stuff like that, I mean, it's just like, you, I mean, we're getting what, like shock jock radios who conservative talk, we're getting Republican officials like putting out statements, I should have gotten the vaccine, and the next day they're dead. Like, it's, I mean, like, we're seeing stuff that like everything that happens now is 100% preventable.
And that's what's, it's unfortunate. It's so devastating to me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you ever listened to the Daily. It's like a New York Times podcast and that kind of comes up, but I don't listen to it regularly, but I listen to it kind of periodically when I'm looking for something else. And they had some interviews with like unvaccinated folks and just kind of talking to them a little bit about why they're unvaccinated and things like this. And there's this one case, this one woman who was both, I was like enraged and devastated in listening to her, right? I can't remember where she's located, but she's clearly somebody who is steeped deeply in this kind of right wing stuff. She homeschools all her kids, right? You know, there's all this other kinds of stuff. She's had coronavirus twice and is hospitalized, right? You can even look in the way she's breathing. She's like, oh yeah, I'm having health. I still feel the effects of it. So I'm like sitting there like, and she still refuses to have vaccinated because she doesn't know what's in the shot, right? And this is kind of what she's saying. And then in their discussion, you're just kind of sitting there like, wait, you've had it, right? And she's almost wearing it like a badge of honor, right? That she's had coronavirus twice and she's survived it. Yet in that discussion, she's saying she still feels the effects of it, even though she's quote unquote over it. And then it comes out of the discussion that like no one in her house is vaccinated, right? And they're like 80-year-old mother lived with them. And her 80-year-old mother died of the coronavirus. And she had dementia, and they decided not to give her the vaccine because she had a bad reaction to a flu shot once. And so she died because of it. And then, so the reporter asks, like, well, so how, I mean, does that make you think about anything? She's like, nope. Nope. She lived a good life. And I'm like, what do you do with that, Sean? I mean, what do you do with that?
Yeah. No, I mean, like, I feel like there's going to be a lot of those, like, dead enders out there. Like, I mean, I see a lot of this, like, happening, like, how everything else happens for conservatives when they come around the social
issues. When it affects them personally.
Yes, when it affects them personally. Like, they will start getting vaccinated. When they get sick, they got sick, their family members get sick, or people that they know start dying. That's what's like ultimately going to take them to get vaccinated. And that's the unfortunate reality of it. Like, I mean, like, it's like, you know, they only support LGBT rights only because like they have family members who become LGBT. Was that Ron Johnson was the senator that or one of them?
I think it was Ron Johnson.
Maybe it was Portman.
Portman.
Someone out there.
It was Portman and his daughter or something like that, wasn't it? I think
one of the family members came out LGBT, and the Republican was staunchly anti-LGBT until their family member came out, like their kid. I think it was someone's son. But like, you know, that's what's going to take for this to like for them to get vaccinated. You're seeing more Republicans tell people to get vaccinated now, but it's not really like doing stuff. But you know. I mean, we should have been over this by now.
That's what kills me. And like, look, here's the second thing I worry about. Like I mentioned, some back to school, kids unvaccinated, blah, blah, blah. Second thing that concerns me is that people are freaking burned out, right? People in the medical profession right now, teachers, like say frontline workers, they're freaking burned out. And I've talked to a number of people, right, over the past week or so, who have just been like, they see these numbers going up and you could see it in their eyes, kind of like, I can't do this again. I can't do this again. And so what happens when I've seen some of these videos that are up on TikTok and kind of and on Instagram of like nurses and other hospital workers who've been quitting because the spike again to say, I can't go through this again. And trying to go to work and sitting there in the parking lot and deciding today's my last day because I just watched another person kick it. So, I mean, there's that. I mean, we have no safety net in this country to begin with. Right. And it's basically, so our safety net is basically people working themselves to the bone and willing them to kind of like make do. When that collapses, there's nothing left underneath that. Now, again, this is me dark clouding it. I understand that, right? But that concerns me. But on the positive front, we can see that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is doing its work, and they're doing some good work, and they've got some great science to tell us that we're absolutely freaking screwed. And I'm laughing at that because I don't know. Maybe I'm looking forward to sailing in the Arctic. I don't know. But I mean, I don't know how much of that you read, Sean, but that is like, it's like, it's devastating.
I didn't read any of it. I literally have tuned out of like climate news lately. Like, I've
okay, Mr. Ostrich, go ahead. Stick your head in the sand. Go ahead.
No, I mean, like, I've read the books. I know the science. Like, I know what the negative feedback loops are and what the triggering points, like, and what we're doing. And it's just, it's not surprising. I mean, like, from what I've seen, this confirms all that. And it's just like, yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, I'm like, I hate to say it, but we're fucked.
YOLO, YOLO, man, like, YOLO.
But like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, so I was thinking about this, right? And so like, there's like this like argument, like, are you like a pro-population or like depopulation progressive or something like that? Like demographics. Like, I've seen like these arguments bubble up, and
yep.
Like, I'm like, I hate to, like, you know, go down this road, but no, I'm just like a realist with the science background. Like, our population is going to crash in the near future. I just, like, we just can't sustain ourselves, even like with more, like, and like, it's just people don't realize that the scale our population will plummet within the next 100 years because of the climate change and all of the things that happen, like, with it. Like, I mean, I feel like these arguments that people are having, like these education arguments, like, you know, like with Maddie Iglesias saying the United States should like be a billion people a nation, which is just fucking outlandish. Like, you know what I mean? Just like, we're a million people in this country, or a billion people, then we're just like roasting the planet on fire at that point, not never turning back. Like,
well, I happen to be one that's like this too.
Just,
as well.
I'm just doom and glooming this right now. But I understand. Like, it's, I don't really think people realize the calamity that is like heading this way with this stuff if we don't act.
Right, like, but here's the thing.
Species is going to bottom. Our species will bottleneck by the end of this, like, as a population.
Right, but I think what we got to be like, absolutely clear about this, though. I mean, about two things, right? For me, at least, right? When I see that, like, the difference between like a deer herd on an island, right, and like human population on the planet, right, is that, you know, the population bottling out is not just a natural progression, right? That this is actually what at this point is a 100% chosen course, right? Both in terms of the burning of fossil fuels and also in the kind of the underdevelopment of big sections of the planet, under the way that capitalism functions as a way to kind of like misdistribute the kind of the goods and to misuse and to waste resources, right? That's really the issue. So the point is for why I think that's important to say is because we got to be clear that when big, large communities start collapsing and dying because of this stuff, right? It's not because of some natural force. It's because we are doing it and choosing to let them die.
Yeah.
It's like that.
But I mean,
that,
like, it's, I don't know. I hate I hate dwindling things down to we're just some, like, the psychology of this. We're just no better than some ear population, like when it comes to psychology and just like the natural progression.
Well, but it's not true though, because it's just not true.
Yeah, I know.
I understand the move to go there. I get that. Right. But like, I would say that the difference is, right, is that like our psychology is more complicated than that, is that otherwise we would not have changed the world in the ways that we have. Right. Our deep problem, if I were to say it differently, has to do more with our organizational structure as a species than it does with anything else. Like, so in other words, if you want to go real sciencey on this, right? You want to go kind of like genetic kind of stuff on this. If you look at like, say, monkey populations, right, and kind of other primate populations, most of those are organized primarily in a hierarchical structure, right? And some of the ones that are kind of like, some of them could be pretty brutal on that, right? However, even in those structures, right, there's alternatives, right? They don't exist in a kind of easy relationship, right? So it's not as if they're in a happy hierarchical structure, like bees in a hive, where everyone's going to work for the queen and there's no question. No, there's like resistance, right? And there's pushback and there's overturn. And I think what humans are able to do is say, okay, sometimes you can say you can make a conscious decision, not just to recreate the structure, but to change the structure, right? And we've done that. And there is no necessary reason why that goes in a progressive or a positive direction, right? It's always a collective or collaborative choice. The problem is that we don't, our collective gene or whatever like this, right, has lost out to the power gene or whatever you want to put it on like this, right? Yeah. And we get progressively better when we fight for it, right? But then we let it slip, right? And so then we have to fight it all over again. I mean, it's just, if we want to do that. So it's like, I just reject any kind of notion that what we're going to see over the next like 50 years is like, oh, it's just a kind of the natural outcome of kind of who we are. So really there's nothing that we can do about it. But on the other hand, I agree with what you want to talk about, like in a more narrow idea about the psychology, is like, I'm not hopeful that we're going to be able to muster the political will, right, to actually do what we need to do in the next 10 years. Because they already said, like, the ocean rise, that's baked in. There's nothing we can do about it now.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to see that. And the only thing we can do is mitigate the worst stuff.
Yeah, and it's just like, we're going to see the oceans rising. There's a great line in the Menzinger song. I was there when the wall fell down, and I'll be there when the oceans rise. Like, from Thick as Thieves. Like, or their song Strawberry Mansion.
Gen X, man.
Or like their songs, Strawberry Mansion, which is just like a big fuck you to climate change, like pretty much, but like, yeah, I mean, like, it's pretty much it. I was there when the wall fell, and I'll be there when the oceans rise.
Yep. So it's like, you know, I that's why I think that, you know, for me, I mean, there is not a whole lot of else to say other than kind of like, look, it's like, this is crisis situation, and are we going to respond to the crisis? I don't know what else there's to say about this. And I look at what's happening with the infrastructure bill. Like, yeah, they, you know, have the, you know, you think about the politics.
And then like the 10 Democrats who came out this morning and to block the fucking $3.5 trillion bill in the House.
I didn't see that. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Cuellar and like 9 other Democrats came out and said they will not vote for the $3.5 trillion package until the infrastructure bill is signed.
Oh, that's a positive way.
Is that positive?
Wait a minute. You're saying until
they won't vote on the reconciliation package. Until Biden puts the House bill into law. Which at that point, I think progressives in the caucus say, fuck you, then we're not voting for either of them.
Yeah. My God. I didn't see that yet. I was actually looking last night to kind of see, like, what is the status of this thing? Because it's like everything that comes out is like, oh, that, you know, $3.5 like, trillion package is like, oh, no, it's actually not through. Come on, don't get some of the reporting's been bad.
Like, there's that.
But you see it like this. Like, that's a perfect example, though. It's like these people are still like playing the games in front of their nose that they're used to playing
from 2000.
And it's like, have you lived through this summer
on fire,
where California's on fire? The second round of heat waves is hitting the Northwest right now. The next heat dome is going over there. That's going to be this, like, the past 2 days, it's been over 100 degrees in freaking Portland.
Delta variants through the country.
Right. I mean, there's wildfires everywhere. Did you watch the videos of like rivers running through the streets of China, like toppling cars? Did you watch what happened in Belgium? Did you see what happened in India? I mean,
that was almost like Harrisburg the other day. There was like a foot of water, or like 6 inches of water, just rushing through all the fucking streets because of like the downpour we got.
I mean, it's like, look, I said this on the show on Monday. I said, like, look, if right, the one positive thing that we've got right now, like, if you ever believe in this kind of like harmonic convergence, however you want to call it, if you believe in a God or whatever it might be, right, where you have, okay, this report comes out, And you've got this infrastructure stuff, this stuff that actually can start to address the issue. I even think the $3.5 trillion is still insufficient, but whatever. You got that. And this is happening. All this is being released at a time when the world is literally on fire, right? Floods are ravaging the streets. Like, all everything that they're talking about in climate change is actually happening. And if you can't make it happen now, I mean, right now it's like showing you, hey, look, here's the proof, right? Remember we're talking about in that report? This is what we mean. Like, the stuff that's outside your door, that's what we're talking about. And so the only thing that can happen in the absence of that is if you have this absolutely like massive die off because of some, you know, that we get like such high bulb temperatures that people cannot any longer cool off their internal core and they die. Right. I mean, that's what really, I mean, read people. I'm telling you, read Ministry of the Future by Kim Stanley Robinson. This is one of his most recent books. And it's about near future on this stuff. And that's how it begins. That's what causes actions. And it's devastating. So anyways, in other news, right?
It's like happy news.
In our happy news, let's talk about the insurrection.
Oh, fuck. We're still talking about that. I thought we were talking about the census data.
Oh, no, we'll get there. No, that's the happy news we conclude with.
Yeah. I guess we're getting ready for insurrection 2.0 again. I don't know. I mean, I thought we were doing the podcast last week, so I was like really stoned and I forgot that like you were out, and then like I was all geared up and like dying to talk about Jeffrey Clark.
There you go.
Like how fucking close we came.
So then like shall you connect the dots to just so everybody remembers where Jeffrey Clark came from?
Jeffrey Clark was the one who was wanted to pressure he was this attorney in the Department of Justice who wanted to pressure Georgia to overturn their election results. And he was put there by Scott Perry.
Everybody remember, where is Scott Perry from, everybody? This is a quiz.
My
Pennsylvania, right? Is Scott, yeah, right
my
there.
Congressman.
And let's all remember, you want to talk about voting has consequences. Here you go.
Yeah. So Perry did this. So, you know, it came out that Clark had this like letter all typed up, ready to go. The only reason why it didn't get sent is because like literally two or three people within the Department of Justice had the balls to say no.
Yeah.
Like literally like, and you just imagine at that point, what would the streets have looked like if they actually like overturned their election? Because I think at that point, I was waiting for the progressive side to respond to what the Republicans were doing this whole entire time. Like, I'm still kind of upset that Democrats, we as a movement, allowed that to happen, impeded, like, you know, we had those 3 days. And once the election was called, we kind of like went inside and that was it for the summer, for the winter. I get it. Like, there was a pandemic raging, but like, you know, at what point? Again, like, I don't know. I think like one side Republicans and the insurrectionists are playing for keeps.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to put it.
And we let a pandemic put us aside because, like, I mean, the right wing has grown tremendously over this pandemic. The stuff with the insurrection, we're seeing it now. No, I mean, like, again, like, Trump has to be prosecuted. I don't think, like, he will. But like any coup attempt that goes unpunished is a dress rehearsal.
Yep.
So we'll see if the Democrats have the actual have the testicular fortitude to put them through that. But I mean, you know, like I feel like with the commission happening, ripped the Band-Aid off that bullet wound with the Trump. I mean, I think you're seeing them respond in a way where they're just overreact. They're not even going. I don't even think like the Republicans are going on offense with this. They can't. And now that it's started, it's just I think the dam has burst for them, and we're seeing it spew out in slow motion. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's kind of like I feel like the dam broke already with this.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, it's, you know, in many ways,
like they were holding up this commission from happening for so long. And now that the notes, like the fact that Rosen's notes are out there, right? I mean, you got to think like Jim Jordan and Scott Perry are actively being investigated. They should be criminally charged.
Yep.
I mean, like, I've been saying this since like the fucking election. These people were up in the Capitol in November. Like, they were here. Like, they were the Stop the Steal movement. Sorry, like, what the fuck is Jim Jordan doing in Harrisburg?
Yeah.
The day after the election.
Look, I'm still waiting for the montage of this stuff to come out, like, with the music in the background, which is going to be, bye-bye, Miss American Pie. The day the music died.
I mean, like, is it a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, as, like, as an, I mean, as a contrast, right? As, like, that's what those people wanted, right? They wanted they wanted to kill American democracy and put a death knell in it. And it's like, and it's still,
they came close.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like, you know, and like,
and they're still emboldened. They're yes. still doing this, like, this audit stuff. They're, you know, another thing we didn't talk about since, you know, we were away last week. You know, like the fucking people going around door knocking in York County. You have Tucker Carlson going over to Hungary, and like,
that was like,
you know, just like, I mean, that even for like Tucker Carlson, that seemed like out of the fucking blue. But like, no, I mean, this guy is just like openly promoting authoritarianism and the benefits of authoritarianism on his, like,
I'm sure that he thought that was one of the best PR moves that he can make to basically like secure up his like far right base. Right. Because look, Fox News has been worried, right? Has been worried about Newsmax and like, you know, the own network and things like this. And I think this is like Tucker Carlson's like, I mean, he's already, you know, kind of white nationalist, right? All the, you know, whatever.
I know we talked about this, like, how's Fox going to respond with OAN
and Newsmax? Is one of, like, his is the most popular show.
Migrate themselves or, yeah.
Yeah. You go to Hungary and you know what? He goes to Hungary and he doesn't even have to say what he's doing. And it automatically like resonates with his base, and now they are locked in for this next.
And everyone else
cycle.
Should be fucking worried about that.
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
Like, yeah, that. So, like, I mean, like, that's going on.
But there is some good news.
What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're still on the instruction.
I'm still in the instruction part. Okay, but like, no, there's that. Yeah, I mean, the commission's happening. I feel like the stories are going to come out. I feel like the floods are happening now. Like. People know Scott Perry was involved with this. People know Jim Jordan was involved in this. I would love to see Scott Perry get fucking brought up in an orange jumpsuit. Like, please. But yeah.
I mean, look, at the, like, very least, that guy should have to testify before Congress. I mean, before that commission. I mean, they should subpoena him.
And I mean, we saw it a couple weeks ago when, like, I think we might talk about this on the podcast, yeah. When Mark Meadows said the cabinet was meeting. No, that wasn't a cabinet meeting. That was everyone getting their stories in line.
That's a small C cabinet, Sean. Small C.
what do they call that in the Costa Nostra? The fat?
Oh.
Like... But what do they call the meetings? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm drawing a blank. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Like the one that got busted with Buffalo.
I just
got
to bring in my concierge here for this.
No, like the guy who gets caught up, the one that gets like the one family meeting gets busted, like 130 mobsters in New York.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, cops, yeah. In New York.
But no, I mean, like, we're seeing that. But like, yeah. No, I guess I'm up for good news now.
All right, good. Bring the good news, Sean. Wave of good news.
The census data got released,
and
bodes really well for Democrats in this state.
Maybe
in Pennsylvania. I would say so.
Because
Philadelphia gained 80,000 people over the past year. I think like 50 counties lost population.
Yes.
A lot. The 10 counties that gained, or the 14 counties that gained population, are all in the south central to southeastern part of the state. Going up towards like, I guess, up towards like Monroe, where we're seeing that influx of like New York.
Yep.
New York City population. No, but we're seeing like red counties grow in population, which means that those are not Republicans moving in. Those are, you know, like, Democrats moving in, like something like Hampton Township, saw 5,000 people.
Yeah.
Population growth on the West Shore. Like, there's some West Shore township that saw thousands of people
yep.
moving over the past 10 years. These are going to have significant impacts on how the House and Senate districts are drawn, especially going to have impacts on congressional districts. We are losing a congressional seat, but for the House and Senate lines, this should be really good with, you know, with Democrats. Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, there should be seats popping up out of thin air in Philadelphia, Montgomery, and Bucks County, just from like
yes.
Republicans Look, losing on the West, Democrats will be gaining on the East.
Totally. And like, and I tell you right now, I see in my own little like area right here in Percy, like the kind of development that has happened. Like, there's been some of the, you know, the luxury house farms that have kind of gone up, right? But you've got kind of a bunch of mixed use housing that's going in, right? But it's kind of like, you know, it's all this development and they're filling immediately. They're putting in these loft spaces. They're putting on all this kind of stuff. They've just got this new restaurant that opened up with a rooftop bar, and it's getting all this buzz because there's all these folks that are moving to the area and they're looking for things. And they're moving not from like Warminster, like how they were before. They're not moving from Northeast Philly, right? They're moving, like you said, like from these kind of like other areas that are kind of much more democratically.
Or they're moving not even from like Philadelphia. They're transplanting
from New York. Exactly.
They're transplanting from out of state.
Yes, exactly.
Into these areas.
From New Jersey, I could see that. What it was confirmed.
I mean, we're seeing the same stuff happen here on the West Shore suburbs. Yes,
exactly.
Out here in Harrisburg. You know, Harrisburg now has 50,000 people, which means we're open up to like all these federal block grants right. from hitting that threshold. Good stuff all around.
Well, and I think, you know, look what happened in the New York Times reporting on this, they did a whole map of this. And that dynamic that you just described is not something that is distinct to Pennsylvania either, right? Rural counties, like by and large, lost population. Right. In comparison with the kind of the more urban or these other kind of developing areas. Right. And they have consistently tended to lean right. More Democratic if you're kind of looking at it like that.
And hopefully this breaks the Republican stranglehold. I mean, it should break the Republican stranglehold. Doesn't mean that we will see that within the first cycle or two.
Right. Right.
But like, this should break the Republican stranglehold, the rural stranglehold.
Right.
That is on our politics in Pennsylvania. Well, I mean, we have a rural minority controlling an urban and suburban majority in the state. I mean, it's pretty much just how it is.
Look, I think that this is also one of the reasons why we see these kind of voter suppression efforts kind of gearing up so much right now. Because I think that Republicans have already been keyed into some of these like, demographic shifts, right, that they're seeing happening already, and they know that they have to lock it down. Plus, the other thing that came out with the census data saying this is the first time that we've seen a decrease in white population kind of as a whole.
Even in Pennsylvania, it dropped 5%.
Exactly. So we're seeing this, and again, you know, just the way that those racial dynamics are coded politically, I know that it's got that is also the thing that's freaking the people out on the right. So
yeah, and it's like one of the things I never realized or understood, like I get that it exists and I know it exists, is like the anti-Mexican, anti-Latino hatred in this country, especially in the Northeast. Like, and from like traveling to the yep. South, like I don't know if this is like an issue that's extremely extensive in the Southwest, like where you have Mexican populations and Latino populations that are close to like 40-50%, which is like the trajectory of where our country's going. Mm-hmm. Or like, are we seeing a lot of this backlash, this white lash coming from like states like Pennsylvania that are going from like 80% white to like 75 and 70? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just, I don't know like what the racial, I would imagine the racial dynamics at West are shitty. They always have been. We've never learned about them, but it also seems like the Latina population is more acceptable, or they're more prevalent within society out West, obviously because of how expensive they are. But it's like, you know, things like Spanish is being taught in schools out there and stuff like that. You're always seeing like those changes happening where people are saying, even Republicans, like, yeah, our kids are being taught Spanish, you know, and they don't mind that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we saw that on Vacation. So I just don't know if like the, if we're like that, we're seeing that like boiling around the politics of race, the insurrection, and like that dwindling white communities.
Right.
I mean, getting replaced by like other, you know, like we're seeing that plurality.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And it's like, this is where you see, just, you see the, you know, what's going to win out, right? What's going to win out? Like, look, right now, it's like what we're seeing is that, you know, white supremacy is basically being put to test. Right. Because look, I mean, in those areas, in the areas of the country that are kind of like primarily Latino or strong African-American, like those are areas also that you see in the strongest kind of like, you know, the most brutal white supremacy, precisely because, right, you know, it takes more to justify a white, you know, a white power structure. But that's been slowly breaking down, where in places like Zach, you said in Pennsylvania, right, we see this, you know, you've had a kind of a racial divide that's been like exacerbated, like has been written primarily along urban rural, right? And that's changing, right? And so, you know, it's like we talked about this on the show kind of like months ago, when you had that, you know, say a lot of the places where we saw, you know,
like for instance, this week, Republican, we have a Republican committee offered a hearing on driver's licenses being offered to undocumented workers in the state. Mm-hmm. Which is like something you don't think like would happen, but I mean, like you would have to think like, you know, their donors, i.e. the farmers from their districts, rely on migrant labor.
Right.
Like you have to like wonder, like, where's that, where does that dichotomy come in? Like, you know what I mean? Hey, you can be racist, but don't like be racist to the point where it drives our workforce out.
Yep.
Like, you know what I mean?
No, but look, there was, I remember this, remember like when Lou Barletta was making a name for himself, kind of up, you know, kind of basically going 100%.
Which, I mean, he was responsible for like all the undocumented workers moving into his town through like, I mean, Hazleton was advertising in the years before Barletta right. became mayor, where like while he was mayor, for like housing, cheap housing to these right. communities of color in New York City.
Right.
Like, so, it wasn't like this, they just came out of nowhere. Like,
no, exactly. No, a matter of fact, it was because, and it had to do with like a labor force stuff too as well. And they had, and it, after when he went 100% anti-immigrant after that, like, I remember there was this article in the Morning Call about this, right? And it was kind of going, like running through like this interview with this farmer, who's a tomato farmer that was up from just outside Hazleton, right? And he's saying, he's like, you don't understand. He said, I've been offering like $15 an hour. I keep on upping the amount of hours. Like after all the folks that have all the kind of the Mexican and kind of Latino folks that kind of were living here that were working on my farm, after that they were forced out, right? I've been trying to get other people to work for here and no one will work. And so I have tomatoes that are rotting on my fields, right? At like, because, and so, and this guy was not like a progressive Democrat, right? It was just, he's like talking about
conservative Republican.
Yeah, but it's like, but
needs
also,
a labor force.
Right, exactly. And again, yeah. That's a separate issue than say, well, okay, this is kind of like a messed up system that we've got here too as well, right?
But plantation, like,
right, but
like farm, yeah, like we're, yeah, it's.
But those people understand the economic impact, right? And so you'd think that there would be at least some way, but it's not.
Hey, man, don't like cut back on the tone down the racism a bit.
yeah just a like, tad, just a tad,
like, you know, we need our employees out here, like you're, yeah. So I mean, but you know, we're seeing that it's going to be interesting seeing how this plays out, because like now we're gonna have all the law firms coming in and stuff like that in Harrisburg trying to keep the Republicans, all the dark money is going to start coming in, and like all this stuff. They're going to do whatever they can to hold on to control through the redistricting process.
You bet. You bet. So, all right, man. So there's our good news for the week. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little what's happening a little bit closer to home here. And once again, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Ragey Chicken. We're going to be back right in a minute. I want to remind you that you can help support this show and support all our podcasts, support our new development in areas that we haven't even discussed yet by going to patreon.com/rcpress, and you can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Ragey Chicken. We'll be back right after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1892. That was the day miners in Tracy City, Tennessee, rebelled against the state's convict lease system. miners had been forced to work side by side with convict labor. The convicts, overwhelmingly African American, were forced to live in deplorable stockade conditions. Their presence in the mines served to minimize paid labor, keep wages low, and stunt union organizing throughout the state. Miners demanded that Tennessee Coal, Iron, and Railroad give them the same hours of work as the convicts. When they refused, the miners marched on the stockades where the convicts were housed. They released the convicts and marched them onto trains bound for Nashville, burning the stockades to the ground. The revolt at Tracy City followed armed uprisings of thousands of miners the previous year in nearby Briceville and Coal Creek. Here, it is thought that the Knights of Labor leaders led miners to surround stockades, disarm guards, and release convicts onto Knoxville-bound trains over the course of several days. By August of 1892, hundreds of miners would confront state forces in armed shootouts across Grundy, Marion, and Anderson counties, releasing convicts when they could onto trains bound for Nashville. Miners were eventually arrested and convicted, but these revolts would lead the Tennessee General Assembly to end its convict lease system 4 years later, making them one of the first southern states to do so.
Well, it brought in the entire state militia, heavy artillery and Gatling guns.
For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
The newspaper said they won a great victory, handed out medals for their bravery. They got the convicts out of the mines.
Welcome back. It's Kevin Mahoney from Raging Chickens Out to Coop podcast, here once again with Sean Kitchen, that motherload of millennial angst. Middle-aged millennial angst, to be clear. Sean, man, stuff been like happening a little bit here in Pennsylvania here too as well. What do you got for us?
So we released a little bit of, we have some right to know request fun going on here in Pennsylvania with PA Spotlight. What's the best way of putting this? We released some stuff around. So after that Wake story, TSI story, broke with the Arizona Mirror and Doug Mastriano and the Arizona audits going on, and it was a Pennsylvania company connected to it in Fulton County. So after the news of the Fulton County audit broke, we filed all these right to know requests in different counties, and a couple of them that we filed were Fulton and York. We published our stuff from Fulton and York this week. A couple of the emails from Fulton County are pretty hilarious. They happened the day after the election, or the week after the election was called. And I mean, it pretty much just shows, like, not really all that surprising that the audit happened in Fulton County. When you have the commissioners pretty much just like asking to like overturn election results.
Yeah.
Like less than like a week after the election has been called, and everyone knew mathematically that Biden was going to be the winner, and that like Trump had no like course of action. And so, I mean, like the emails were pretty like, just like, hey, can you like, we need help this Trump campaign with this rigged election.
So what can we do here?
Yeah, like this is what the first email said. Hi, Judy. Hope you're doing well. Sending this email to see what's going on with the rigged election, with this rigged election. Just read a tweet from that President Trump put out about the Domino's voting machines. We can't let Domino's. This election get stolen. If there's anything I can do, please let me know. Exclamation point.
So, I didn't know election fraud could be delivered.
Yeah.
30 minutes or less.
I mean, I prefer Little Caesars. I don't know about you.
I like to go local, actually. Percocet Pizza and Pasta, you know, go Chiaro's Pizza, go that, yeah.
And then the other commissioner, from a private email account he sends out to, like, everyone else, so, of course, like, this is in there. The people who are asking who's all in this fight with Senator Mastriano, I replied, this is clearly a state issue in PA elections. Wolf, spelled with an E at the end, can't be allowed to do this. It couldn't hurt the Trump campaign if our state representatives all got involved. if we don't stop this, this election problems, next will be worse. If there are 109 House members and 29 Senate and 27 Senate members, with Mastriano, it would be a big help. The people need this. Respect their vote. Commissioner Stuart Ulsh. So, I mean, like, these were sent on November 9th and November 12th, like, of 2020, the literally, like, hours after the election called. So, I mean, it paints a picture of how, like, you know, these emails go to Judy Ward and Jesse Topper. They all signed the letters. Like, obviously, this is just crackpot conspiracy theories coming from these two. But, like, these are people who are already, A, elected in office, right? And then, like, B, like, they already have a captive audience. Like, it's like what Chris Hayes and Maddow have been saying. It's not like they're speaking to anyone new.
Right, right.
They're speaking to a captive audience with all this. And it's just, like, it's just amazing what these people will put down in their emails. So.
Yeah, it's something else. And, like, it also shows, too, as well, that, like, this – like, they didn't come up with this at the last minute, right? That this was already, they're already ready for it.
Yeah, this didn't come up at the last minute. And it just shows you that this isn't just like a Mastriano thing. Like, it just reinforces the idea that this is a Republican Party issue writ large, like every cog in the machine, you know, and they're still going at it with the audits. So on the flip side, we have York County, and they denied our request. So we've been following these requests for a while. We appealed this, but we got one email showing at least like Stan Saylor knew about Mastriano's audit proposal back in January. But they pretty much denied any emails that the House and Senate, not even that they deny it, the House and Senate Republicans lawyers, the counsel for those caucuses got involved with the county and told the county not to hand over those emails, which is not the case. Those emails aren't protected. They were talking with public officials in different counties, and those county emails are obtainable through the rights of no request process. So that's pretty much it. So
there you go. Nothing but joy, man.
Yeah.
That's a nice little
still
catch,
waiting
I have
on
to
Mastriano.
Say.
What's that?
Still waiting on Mastriano what?
Oh, we're still waiting on Mastriano for the hearing with the audits and stuff like that. So we'll see.
It's crazy. Well, Pennsylvania is definitely has got a center role that's kind of moving up on it. You got anything else happening in PA you want to throw in?
No, nothing too much going on. We're just waiting for stuff to happen. Mastriano, like, hearing soon. So, I mean, we'll see what the next. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Well, I know, like, everything in my life right now is all geared towards back to school stuff. Obviously, my, you know, kids getting ready to go back to school. Our school district's got all kind of like in person stuff, but, you know, just like that, my son is going, will see the inside of his school for the first time, his middle school for the first time ever. My daughter's finishing out elementary school, and so you've got all that. And, of course, I'll be seeing the inside of classrooms at Kutztown University, too, as well. Kutztown University remains to be one of the holdout universities that is not going to, you know, they do have a masking requirement, right, that just got put in place because of...
The vaccine mandates. They're not going to do a vaccine mandate.
They are not going to do a vaccine
mandate. Did you see what Penn State did?
Yes.
Did you see what Penn State did? Just... flat out saying, like, yeah, we're not doing this because we don't want right-wingers, like, opposition campaigns,
yep,
and stuff like that. Like, or, like, we need two-thirds funding from the Republican legislature. So we're just not going it's amazing how, again, the anti-vax movement has, like, turned into, like, this from fringe left, holistic healing vibes, moon crystal types, like, you know what I mean? Now, yep. Obviously your family has a different history with it, so, but, like, that switch from that to, like, this virulent, violent, like, rabid right wingers who think this is a personal freedom issue.
It's really remarkable.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's not even like, yeah.
But you know, it also says so much to me.
It's amazing, like watching those polls flip like that. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, it also, like, but also, let me think about this too. Like Penn State, right? I mean, look, if you ask most people in the country, right, about like, well, what university you associate with Pennsylvania, it's even one or two, right? Depending on their class position. Like most people will say Penn State, right? That's what they know about Pennsylvania, or they'll say Penn, right? Because there's Pennsylvania in the name.
Or Penn.
Yeah, but even then, right? I mean, they might say like, oh yeah, Pitt. Right. I mean, and I don't mean that like that's not a dig on Pitt, but I just mean just about name recognition. I mean, because if anything, like Penn State is the brand, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's exactly right. I mean, that's yeah. what it is, right? And so
we've had many talks about how much about Penn State over the years.
We have, and but for like the monolith and powerhouse that Penn State is.
To right. fucking fold like that.
Is there even like even that? This is the state of our higher education leadership. Is say we are not going to look at science. We are not going to look at like the best academic information. We're not going to look at expert knowledge. No, we just don't want to get sued by these right wing nut jobs and have to deal with all that. So let her rip. Right. I mean, really. And, you know, and it's like it's for me. Look, as somebody who's been. You know, I admit, and I've said this before on the show, but I admit that I came to higher education with a much more idealistic understanding of what happens in higher education than it actually was. I mean, I was always gradually disabused of kind of my most kind of utopian ideas about higher education from the get-go. But I loved higher education. And I believed, I really did, I believed that higher education could be a place, right, was one of the few last places that you can actually see where, like, you're going to, you know, debate ideas, right? You're actually going to have that kind of exchange and that you're having kind of like a rational discussion. And I always knew there was conflict. I didn't think it was some kind of pure space, right? But to see it devolve into like where public relations and fear of lawsuits drives everything, and to have and actually to be at a university with a freaking university president, right, who had COVID and still doesn't give a crap, right? It's just like, you know, it's so disgusting. Let me give you an example. Okay. I wasn't even going to talk about this because it's really minor, but there are like,
oh, we got them going.
Like I know.
Hook, line, and sinker. Here like, we go.
No. This is a small thing. This won't take long. I know, Sean. Exactly. Let's get it all going. But here's the thing.
And I'm doing the fishing rod.
Fishing rod. I thought you were doing like, come on, man, let's get going. So here's it. So like, I mean, this is like something that happens normally, right? So you're planning your syllabus for the fall, right? And then you decide which days your office hours are going to be on and things like this. And at Kutztown University, like every other posh university, you have to have 5 office hours, a week and over the course of 3 days. So you have to spread them out, right? And the idea is that you have access and all that kind of stuff. It's great. So several years ago, there was a push that was coming like from our administration and Pashi, right, to kind of like, you know, for distance education. And so there was more classes being held online. And so there was this question that came up about, you know, we need to have a policy about online office hours. Right. And, you know, in the union, in the faculty union, it was a pretty contentious issue. It was a really interesting one. Right. I mean, it took months of discussion because there were a lot of faculty members who were really opposed to having online office hours because they believed that you should be on campus available for students. Right. But there were also lots of faculty members. And this is just in like faculty and faculty discussions. Right. At this point. That I'm talking about. And other faculty members were like, yeah, but you know what? As more and more students are accessing things online, right, and are taking classes online, right, we need to be able to have online office hours, right? And just like if you're doing a distance education class, if you're having online classes, right, you shouldn't have to be in your office, for example, in those periods of time, but you should need to be able to like accessible on those online office hours. And those online office hours could be like, you know, available for any student, not just the ones in distance ed, right? So after a long discussion and we finally came up with a policy, right? And that was that we passed through our representative council, right? That was basically saying in 2013, I believe, 2017, I think, was that, okay, you could have upwards of, say 40%. If you are teaching at least one class online, you could have about 40% of your office hours could be online, right? And the rest of them needed to be in person over at least two additional days, something like that, right? And so it was okay. And so, you know, I have to admit, I at that point, I had never taught a class online. I really didn't feel like I had a dog in the fight, you know? It's like, I could understand the push and pull from both sides. And so, you know, whatever. I mean, in the end, I think that you came to a decent solution. Okay, so I vote for it. And so then the pandemic comes. So then that policy rolls out. Then the pandemic comes, right? And then we're all thrown into kind of like this online world, right? And some of us who have not been fans of distance education, me being one of them, suddenly found out that actually I had more students that were coming to my office hours when I had them on Zoom, right, than I did when I had them coming in person, right? And I could actually understand why, right? And I had students tell me stuff like this, like, you know, I have a couple students in my mind when I'm saying this, but like saying like, you know, God, I wish we had these like during the year, because it would be so much easier if I had a question to just kind of like hop on Zoom for an office hours instead of having to kind of plan, especially on my commuter or I'm across campus or whatever it might be. I was just like, okay, this is interesting. And I actually had really productive conversations, especially in my office hours. So this year, right, I have one class that is online. They kept that one class online. And I just wanted to know, okay, look, you know, I was planning to have extra office hours in addition to my regular ones and having some of those online. And I was going to do them from home, right? Just one day a week. I was going to do some of my office hours at home, but I was going to expend more of them so I'd have, you know, access to those students who are doing online stuff. But also, but I said, but you know what? I haven't seen anything about this process. So I go in and I ask the question, and it turns out there's this huge to-do going on about it, because the administration is actually saying like, nope, pandemic's over. Everything back on, you know, get back in your holes, right? You know, get back in your holes on campus. We want you to be there all the time. And like, there's people in the union say, okay, I get that, but we've got this agreement. They're like, that's the pandemic. They're like, no, this is signed before the pandemic, right? And so now it's going to result in this huge grievance. So let, you know, and then now that it's going to be this big fight right up at the beginning of the semester over what goes on. I'm just like, whatever, tell me what the dictates are and I'll follow them, right? But the point is this, is that we have an administration, both locally at Kutztown University and at the state, are talking about innovation and flexibility and finding new ways of doing stuff. Here you have faculty members who have learned something positive out of a horrible situation and say, hey, you know what? I can actually have more engagement with my students if I do this online. And if I don't have to commute 2 hours on one day a week, I can actually add those into my office hour. How about that? I could be more
back
accessible.
In the cages.
Nope, back in your cages, right? And I mean, it's stuff like that that basically makes you just want to throw up your hands like, you know what? I don't care anymore. It's like, I love what I do in the classroom, but we have an administration and a state system that make it so freaking difficult to do our basic jobs. And so I had a student ask me this that I met over the summer, different contacts, you know, just online, just about, you know, professional stuff or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I don't have that. I can't wait to get back on campus feel. I used to look forward to going back to campus more than anything. I loved it. I loved when the fall was coming. I'd feel the excitement about coming back, all that kind of stuff. And this dynamic that we have in this administration and their denial of any expertise, they're willing to kind of thumb their nose at anything a faculty member does and pretend that they're doing it in the service of students and not for their own, I don't even freaking know what, psychological needs. Right? You killed it for me, man. You killed it for me. So happy back to school, everybody. Happy back to school. So I will be back on campus, right? And you know what? And they're going to get more than they bargained for. That's all I can say. That's all I'm going to say. You want to just be prepared. This is a warning. Hawkinson, Pashi, be prepared. Right? Anyways, That's my happy back to school message, Sean.
Very nice. Very nice.
All I know is I'm gonna have right to know request on kind of like, you know, quick release.
I can help out with that.
Yes. Okay. Cool. Excellent. That'll be fun. So anything else for the good of the order and PA and beyond?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, cool. So we're going to take another quick break, and we're going to come back with this week's last call. Yes, indeed. We're going to do a last call this week. We're going to be back right after this. Remind you that you can help support this show by going to patreon.com/rcpress. We'll be back right after this real quick break. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting, and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back. Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, here once again with Sean Kitchen for this week's Last Call, where we talk about whatever the hell we feel like talking about. Maybe space news, maybe beer news, maybe cultural stuff. I don't know. We're just going to see what's else. The kind of the what do they call it? It's like the flotsam and jetsam of our discussions, right? So it's left over. There's this one word that they say, the ejecta from a meteor hit or something like that. But I got a couple kind of little things here. I don't have any space news this week, even though there's tons of stuff that's going on. You can look at what's happened with SpaceX. They're trying to put up their kind of Falcon Heavy. There's all sorts of kind of back and forth that's going on with the FCC, which is fascinating. I already mentioned this, right? So happy birthday goes out to my daughter, Scout, who's yesterday was her birthday. And that was felt like a very good day in my mind. We got to spend the whole day together. It was absolutely wonderful. So happy birthday. This goes out to my brother Ryan, and I love hate him for it. So when I was up in Utica last week, got to see him, got to see my nephew and Ryan's wife Heather and stuff. So we're up there and you know, he just kind of mentions to me offhand. I don't know how, you know, he's like a D&D kind of guy. I love D&D for years. And he just kind of mentioned, I can't remember how he got on the topic exactly, but he's been watching this, watching this YouTube show, right, called Dragon Run, right? And people might be familiar with Critical Hit. Critical Hit's like a, you know, it's like a live, like, you know, campaign, like a D&D campaign, Dungeons and Dragons campaign. And he said, you know, Critical Hit. Like, yeah, I kind of know about it. I don't, you know, seen a few things. And he's like, well, I watched Dragon Run. It's like, it's really good, blah, blah, blah. You should check it out. I'm like, yeah, I should. And then I'm sitting there like late at night trying to working on my syllabi and things like this. And then I just got burned out and said, okay, I need a break. So I'll check out this Dragon Run thing. And I'm just freaking hooked, man. I was like, it's been so much fun. If you ever loved D&D, Dragon Run is like, it's great. I'm like, the downside of it, this is the hate side of it. Like normally that would be all love at this point, right? The love part would be like, damn, this is really good. It's like, it makes me happy. Look, I've even like printed out dungeon maps now. See that? I have this. And look at this. I can even, I don't even know if I have it here. Yeah, look. Look, I made, well, you can't really see it, can you? I made one. You can't really see it. But whatever. Just kind of like, you know, when I'm taking breaks or whatever. But each episode, it actually airs live every Wednesday on like, a, I don't forget, like 9 o'clock Pacific or 7 o'clock Pacific time or something like this. But it's there. Each episode is like 3 hours. Right. So if you ever play D&D, it's like that. Right. So let's just say I started watching when I got back from Utica and I'm on episode 7. Okay. Let me just say that. So but it's for if you want to geek out, it's a great way. It's a great way to do it. Got to say it. So that's why I've been burning the time. And it's what's cool about it is like, you know, look, if you know, there's a lot of like rolling and like, you know, discussion of rules action that goes on. That's not really necessarily the story happens behind it. So it has been the kind of thing where I've been able to kind of sit there. It's kept me in my seat working on my syllabi while I have that playing in the background. So that's been pretty cool. So one last thing I'll say before I see what Sean's got checking on Sean, what he's got going on this week is that, so I mentioned this to, so people had asked about, you know, I had a couple of emails. I mentioned this at the top of the show, but I'll say it again too, as well. We're asking about the Wednesday show. What happened to the Wednesday show, for the past couple of weeks. Last week, Cyril was hoping that he was gonna be able to kind of do an interview and that we're gonna have an interview. It was gonna be another one of those kind of Cyril shows, within interviewing someone for that Wednesday show. He got super, super busy with his work. So that just kind of just didn't work. We thought like kind of a couple of weeks before I was going on vacation that that he had this one interview that he was going to be able to do, but that that kind of that, you know, we got people flake out sometimes, let me put it that way, right? You're trying to set something up and it doesn't work out. And then he got busy this week too as well. So we just didn't do it. I just said, you know, look, we'll just take a break. We'll kind of reboot for next week. So that is coming back. This over the next several weeks, if anybody's been checking in at ragingchickenpress.org, that's the place where Sean and I used to do the bulk of our writing, and you know, we haven't been writing. That is going to be undergoing a little bit of a transformation, and it's going to be a landing page for both, say, all of our podcasts, right? You're going to have a separate feed for each one of those. We're also going to have some more writing that's coming up. I've been talking to some folks that are interested in doing this. I'm going to be exploring having some Raging Chicken. I don't know what to call it yet, but say Raging Chicken on campus or something like this. I'm going to be doing a lot more direct outreach to folks at Kutztown University campus, to actually start working on some of this stuff again. I had a meeting this morning with someone who's really interested in doing some writing, has some background in doing this stuff, doing some podcasting, and that was too as well. So I don't want to say too much at this point because we haven't kind of nailed anything down, but there's going to be some cool stuff in. So you're going to see some writing coming back into Raging Chicken in a little bit of a different form than we have been doing it before. But that's kind of, I'm really looking forward to that because that's, I think it's needed going forward. And also, I've been slowly working on this one too as well. It looks like it's going to be monthly. I will have, it's going to be called Space Left. It will be our my little short podcast on space news, so I won't have to put Sean through this every single week on How to Goo podcast. But we will be doing as part of that podcast. I hope not only just to be doing kind of like the news stuff, but also doing some interviews with folks kind of in kind of the space industries and who are much more critical about this. Some journalists who are looking at what I've called, say, galactic capitalism. And to kind of dig into some of the politics that's happening right now, kind of in the space industry and stuff like that too. So, lots of cool stuff coming forward, and, looking forward for you to be there. So Sean, man, what do you got going on?
Nothing really going on this weekend. I ended up buying a bottle of Lagavulin for my birthday.
Nice.
Yes. So that was nice. Apparently a couple of our listeners thought I was actually turning 40.
I wonder how that happened.
So there was that.
When you weren't away that week, I was saying your 40th birthday is coming up.
So like there was that. And then Yeah, nothing really else too much going on. Just waiting for this hot weather to break.
Well, just so everybody, I don't want to leave everybody hanging there. So let's just be clear. That's a joke because Sean actually turned 39 this year. It's not until next year he turns 40. But, anyways,
I don't know. I got a good head of hair for 40. So
yeah, you do. I have to say, I'm telling you, your lifestyle channel's been popping too.
Yeah, I bought another pair of Adidas shoes.
What do you got? Like 17 pairs of that now, or is it?
I don't know if you can see all the shoes in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I basically keep my shoes downstairs because I don't feel like going up to my room and getting them. So, you know, they got to collect somewhere.
There you go.
Maybe I'll get like a closet bin for them. That's a joke. I gotta be careful with that because
that's
like,
a joke for now. Let me be clear.
No, I'll turn into a joke again if I get gifted it. There's gonna be a fucking closet bin showing up on my door.
Yeah, I wonder how that. I mean, sometimes things like that happens. Whatever happened to your sponge?
I've actually used that a few times. Yeah. So when here's something funny, my landlord was over. You know, with these storms we've been getting, the drain, the gutters have been clogged pretty easily with these fucking storms. So you know, like there's water going into like the windows. Into the window sills.
Oh my god, yeah.
And like filling up into the window ledges and then seeping into the walls. So you know, my roommate, or not my roommate, my downstairs neighbor is my landlord's son. So he came over yesterday and he's just like, the fuck are you two doing? Like, because we were outside like just talking to him. He's like, you two need to get real jobs and stop sitting around all day. And I'm just like, I'm going to have this job as long as I keep getting it. Like, not really looking forward to the day I have to go back into the office.
Yeah. The good news about that, the day that you do have to go back in the office, that won't last long. Because you'll be like, I can't do this.
Could you imagine if I worked in so-and-so's office a couple years ago? Like that person's office.
I would have loved the stories that came out of that, but I think it would have been like a
career killing move.
Well, it would have been, like, but I think it would also been a political version of Pizza Boy for you.
Yeah.
That's how, yeah, I would put it. That's, yes, how I would put it. Well, okay, like so we said, okay.
I don't think like now. Not yeah, like right now, but a few years ago, yes. Like
yes. And so I think that you were saying before about like something, you got to be careful because there's something will show up on your doorstep, right? So I have to share with you now because it's the joke is long past. But the one thing I was trying so hard to send you, but they kept on running out of it, and then it got too bad. Is that this was like earlier in the summer. I wanted so badly to send you a little box of chocolate covered cicadas. There's a company I found, right, that like had the and they call it was like Brood X chocolates, right? And they literally had like Brood X covered chocolates.
I
couldn't get it.
I would have to be like blackout drunk. Like I don't think I would be able to get. Okay, so. Like, I don't think after, like, a night of, like, drinking or smoking, like, even, like, that would push me.
Yeah.
To try that.
Exactly. Exactly. That was, like, the whole thing. That was, like, that would have been the greatest, like, I was so disappointed when I just...
Could you imagine, like, eating that and then getting sick, like, just drinking and
you
just,
see what's
like,
coming out?
Projectile vomiting.
That looks like a wing.
It'll be like, whatchamacallit, the scene from Family Guy. Yeah. So, so I started watching Futurama again.
Did you really?
Yes. So, like, one of the days when I was stoned, I ended up, like, stumbling across a YouTube rabbit hole of, like, review shows, episodes of, like, different Futurama shows or episodes. And it's amazing going back and rewatching this stuff as an adult. Like versus as a as like a kid growing up, like a 9 or 10 year old when they were coming out. Which, I mean, I loved the show growing up. I thought it was an amazing show. But now, it, like, it's it always like that wondered like why the fuck did like Dr. Gambone Kutztown always like this show?
Now you know.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it's like one of those like funny shows that like. So I'm like a few episodes into the first season, but I'm looking forward to like binge watching that through.
Nice. I'm actually looking forward to actually like working on my syllabi and watching Dungeon Run. So it's it's pretty cool.
Nice.
I actually, and my brother did say that, you know, he that's actually led him and his friends to actually start their own D&D game again, which I definitely want to. So listen, if there's anybody out there who's ever interested in exploring that and doing even an online way, that would be awesome.
Let me finish.
He said, so I actually bought the pads of graph paper to start doing dungeons and stuff, which would be cool. Go ahead, sorry.
Nice. So speaking about like geekdom and like nerdom, Lord of the Rings, the Amazon episode.
Is it out?
The Amazon premiere. No, it's not out.
Oh god, I was like, but how did I not know?
It's like they have a set date.
When is it?
And September 2nd, 2022 or 2021 next year.
I gotta wait that
next
long.
Year, year out from now.
I gotta wait that long.
But they released a promotional video.
Uh-huh. Is it good?
Or photo? They released a promotional photo. It includes the two trees of Valinor. So like it, yeah. So it looks like it's one of the cities of Valinor like in the foreground. Like in the background, there's an elf. People think it's Galadriel. Mm-hmm. So, like Galadriel looking over, and then you see the two trees, like past the city in the background. So, like people are thinking, like I've been like following Lord of the Rings nerdom the past year. Yes. I want to read the books. Like, it's going to focus a lot on like, obviously the Second Age. Is went with the set.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the series.
Right.
And it's all going to be, looks like it's going to be based on like the Silmarillion and like probably some other texts. So we'll see. Like,
my understanding is that, there's a lot of it's going to be just completely new, right? I mean, it's, you know, completely developing storylines that are kind of existing in that world. That, I mean, yeah, utilizing the Silmarillion and all that kind of stuff and moving out of it. So let me make
it'll
you
be interesting to see like what.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Or no, go ahead. I was going to say like, it'll be interesting to see like what they, keep, because like I've been watching a ton of videos over the past year. I got hooked into like the actual like stuff from like the Silmarillion and like Torgon and stuff like that, like going into like the first and second ages, and even like that stuff's actually pretty cool.
It's like, awesome. So like my recommendations, if you do decide to read the books, right, don't start with The Hobbit. Start with the first Fellowship of the
Silmarillion?
Ring. No, start with the Fellowship of the Ring. And go through the trilogy first before, and then go back and read The Hobbit. It's like, and the reason why is that my son, you know, I always gave them to him to kind of say like, you know, so check this stuff out. My daughter's getting at the point too, where she's gonna, you know, she'll be able to kind of start the stuff. They're reading Harry Potter right now, the Hobbit is, I find The Hobbit slower, right, and less compelling as a kind of world building part, right, than I do Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's going on and stuff like that, but it felt like the storyline was like really kind of fleshed out. Whereas The Hobbit was kind of, I don't know. There's other people that really disagree with this reading, but that'd be my suggestion, because it's like, it was really, really good. So,
yeah. So it'll be interesting.
Nice.
To see if, like, yeah, so there's a year of that like waiting, but they have a set date. They're going to dump like billions of fucking dollars into this Amazon show. Like, it's going to be the most expensive Amazon show in their history.
And so, my understanding, it's supposed to be filmed in space, right? Film from Jeff Bezos's like Blue Origin capsule.
His penis modular.
God, my God, that thing was crazy. If anybody else looking at other things, I think I've mentioned this to you before too as well, but if anybody's want to watch some really good things that are kind of like Marvel Universe adjacent, Ragnarok is not the Thor movie, right? Not the thing, but there is a series on Netflix called Ragnarok. Be forewarned, it is in Norwegian, right? But you can watch it dubbed or subtitled. It's a great take on the whole kind of Thor Ragnarok stuff. I love it. Again, it's not like, if you're looking for deep TV, don't bother, but otherwise. And then the other thing that I really enjoyed in the same kind of like, you know, geekdom world, it was The Witcher. The first season, you know, if you grew up ever watched like Xena the Warrior Princess or Hercules, where it's got a little bit of a tongue-in-cheekness to it, it's got a little bit of camp to it. This is like a better version in some ways of that. So they've got the new season comes out, I think next week, which is, I'm looking forward to as well. But this is not like, I know what I should have. This is what I should put this in the notes. The one thing do you have Apple TV, Sean?
No, I don't.
So we actually subscribe to this just for this purpose. And, the morning show. Right, it's called The Morning Show. It's with Steve Carell and Jennifer Aniston. It's like a Me Too show, right? It's basically in that kind of context. It is excellent. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely excellent. It's, I mean, I cannot recommend the show enough. I mean, we've been playing, like, slowly moving our way through the season. It is so good. So that's number one. And number two, also on Apple TV, is Ted Lasso. Right. Ted Lasso is one of the best comedy shows that I've seen in a long time. I absolutely love this show. It's like the whole premise of it, if you don't know already, is that he's Ted Lasso. And apparently Ted Lasso was a character from a British advertising campaign. Right. And he's an American college football coach. Right. And he's like kind of like in the kind of like the corny kind of like Midwestern Southern, like, you know, wisdom thing. Oh, I don't know. How about they go down over there and blah, blah, blah. Like kind of like all good, all like, you know, kind of bright eyed, bushy tailed, you know, like Andy Griffith show kind of character. Right. But college football. And he gets hired by a British football team. In other words, a soccer team. Right. To become their head coach. Right. And it's brought on and he doesn't know anything about soccer. Right. But he and his kind of assistant coach kind of come along and do this and they play. And it's just great. It's like it's a really good show. So if you're looking for something else to watch, if you got Apple TV, it's kind of worth it. We splurged on it on kind of buying a subscription, at least for the most part, or paying for the subscription for we work through it. But that's really good, too, as well. But anyways, that's what I got.
Nice.
All right, man. Well, hey, it's good to be back in the kind of like, hopefully in the kind of the rhythm again as we kind of move forward into the fall, and look forward to hitting it. I don't know. So here's to the climate. Here's to the democracy. Here's to the schools. Here's to, you know, the infrastructure. Here's to the census. Here's to the everything like this. We're looking forward to talking more about this in the weeks to come. I've got a bunch of cool things that I hope we'll talk about a little bit more in detail next week. But Sean, man, it's great to be hanging out back and be back in the chair with you, man.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll see you all next week. Remind me, on Monday's show, we're most likely going to have some folks on from the Pennridge School District, if all goes as planned. And then hopefully we'll be back again for the Wednesday show next week with Cyril Michalako. And the week after that, we'll be back right here with Sean talking about what happened in the week's events. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to thank you all for tuning in and thank you all for your support. People who have come on recently as patrons of the show. People who have kind of been sending me tips. I've got someone else scheduled already out for the 30th, and I'll be a surprise. So, face, talk to you soon. See ya! If I exist, am I the sky that